Acts chapter 21.
I can imagine if Nicholas had been here for this reading, he would have said, I want this in the movie. Okay?
Yes.
We're always talking about the movie we're going to make. And this was like page turner.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
It was good stuff.
Tall and...
Yeah.
Phew! You really can get that.
Wow.
Naturally. Quite exciting.
There are some questions along the way. I'm sure Tim will shed some light on those questions for me. And then there are some interesting things. Besides the drama.
Pardon me?
Besides the drama.
A lot of drama.
Could be. Acts 21, beginning in verse 18, Paul has come to Jerusalem, even though several times previous to this he had been warned that if he went to Jerusalem, he'd get into a lot of trouble. And so he meets with the elders of the church at Jerusalem. Interesting, they're not called the apostles. They're called, he met with James and all the elders were present. I like that thought. And they had this discussion, and it says that Paul declared particularly what things God had worked among the Gentiles by his ministry. So it's basically a missions report. You know what that's like. Mm-hmm. And if somebody showed up here and he had just arrived from China and he said he'd been going through China witnessing, I would want him to tell me what happened, how it worked. So, what did God do? What problems were there? Now, you've never had to do this, but some of us have. And you stand in front of a group and you explain what the Lord has been doing in you, around you, the last couple of years, and you ask for questions. And the questions can be everything from, what do they eat in Greece? How many times have you heard that one? To, what's the weather like in Greece? To, how much taxes do you have to pay? You never know. And then every now and then somebody will say, well, what's the biggest opposition to the gospel in Greece? What's the biggest reason why people don't get saved? And so I can imagine that Paul has come to Jerusalem and he's fielding questions, explaining what's happened. And what's the response? How do the people in Jerusalem receive him?
How do they ask?
Yeah.
Warmly.
Yeah.
Oh, they're glad to have him. All right. But I mean the church. What does the church say?
Church.
You mean the main?
Yeah, the true church.
Oh,
what do they think?
Well, they attacked him. Maybe not the church, but they weren't happy with...
The church. What's the church's position on this thing?
They received him glad.
They were glad to have him. They said, but you know, you have a bad reputation. Because there's a lot of people around, and they think you're a troublemaker. Yeah, they think you tell people that they don't have to listen to Moses and don't have to keep the law and don't have to do this, don't have to do that. Well, what are we going to do about it? Well, somebody came to me and said, you have a bad reputation. I'd want to do something about it. But don't you find it a bit weird what they ask him to do? I said, well, we've got these fellas here who've taken on a vow, and we'd like you to shave your head and join them for the duration of the vow, just to show... So what?
I didn't get that.
I'm one of us.
But you're one of us?
Well, I think it was because he was preaching to the Gentiles and he was not going along with all the circumcision and stuff. So they're just like, wait, you're going to do things this way to show us that you haven't changed, you know, doing things the way
traditionally.
Yeah, changed the tradition.
So I thought they weren't happy with him.
Did you have trouble with this? I had trouble with this.
I thought it was weird, but I thought the same thing. I thought it was because they had such a problem letting go of the old traditions. They just had a problem with it. They didn't want to.
No, and they say, well, we've already written to the Gentiles, and we're not telling them that they have to do all these Jewish things. But because you're from the Jewish background, and you're here in Jerusalem, and we've got all these people who've come here for the holidays, we think this would be a good opportunity to branch out. Expand your ministry. Show love. I didn't like this.
Kind of weird.
I thought it was more than weird. Especially because 30 years from now, nobody does this stuff. So what's their point? If I can give it a good view, and this is the best I can come up with, it's probably not satisfactory. We're still in that transition period from Judaism to Christianity, and we're kind of half and half, and the stuff that isn't contrary to the gospel, it's okay to do. And so, not to offend other people, but we go along with some of this stuff. Clearly, later, we're told, you don't need that stuff.
Like this purification.
Yes. What is this all about? Should
but
I be doing
it.
That? And he does it.
Yeah, that's what
that's
I was surprised at.
Kind of shocked me, because he'd written the book of Galatians before this. And he told them, don't let anybody judge you in terms of holidays and eats and drinks. And
three different types of audiences, though. Galatians are Gentile.
Clearly.
Here, the Jews.
Yes.
That's true.
So, in a sense, you know, he's contextualizing, or I should say, to not offend so he loses them, mm-hmm. he goes along not doing something that is sin, but certainly it's not part of the gospel.
Right.
These are not necessary.
Right.
But these people have to be slowly weaned from this, and so as not to say, what are you guys, crazy? And, you know, cuss them right off.
He can be in whatever context.
Right. All things, all men.
Yeah.
Yep. All right. How does it play out, though? Given that he's supposed to do this so that it doesn't cause trouble. It absolutely causes trouble. He would have been better off if he stayed home.
But Paul was never one to shirk, to walk away from trouble.
I think he brought this on.
But all through it, he never hides from trouble. He's
no.
up there, always.
Yeah, but still, we're not supposed to go out and do things that will intentionally get people mad.
Well, he didn't get in trouble for following Jewish tradition or Jewish the customs of the temple.
No, he didn't get in trouble.
He didn't get in trouble for that. He got in trouble because people who recognized him said, this guy's bringing Gentiles
That's
into the
it.
Temple.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is something they despised.
Right.
So he didn't get in trouble because, let's say, he compromised the truth, the gospel.
No, but wouldn't it have been better if he hadn't gotten involved in this at all? Where do you read in any of the next chapter or two that thousands of people were converted and baptized and brought into the church? Because the leaders of the church in Jerusalem say, we know there are thousands of Jews who are believers, and we don't want to offend any of them. Next thing you know, he's created a riot.
They've always said that Paul was the kind of guy who didn't want around Jerusalem. he always, like, instead of attracting people to the gospel, he always, you know, scattered them. But obviously his call was not to the Jew.
that's
and not only obvious, because we see the results every time he's there, he happens to be there, and Paul is Paul, and Paul is going to talk about the Savior, and he's going to talk about the revelations that he's given him, and that is extremely offensive to him.
Yes.
But, you know, obviously, I mean, Christ told him, you're for the Gentile.
Oh, yeah, and it comes up in,
you know,
in not too many verses from this. God says, don't worry about this. You know, I have other work for you to do. But
didn't they say last week, on Sunday, we were reading that, and I know we brought this up when I studied Paul with the controversy. God, they said the Holy Spirit said don't go to Jerusalem.
Exactly.
And he went anyway.
Yes.
So was he wrong for being here in the first place and stirring up all
right.
You know.
It doesn't work out well.
No.
You think maybe Paul that did what so many of us do, decided that he would try his way?
I don't want to speak for him. All I know is
we know he loved the Lord.
If he wanted to get to Rome, he gets an all-expense-paid trip.
Yeah.
He doesn't have to raise money for the plane
ticket. I'm going
to
say that
justify the means.
It was already told to him. You know, if anybody says to me, the Spirit has led me to do this, the Apostle Paul is one guy that I would believe more than anybody else. And he headed to Jerusalem because he said that the Spirit had told him to go. Now, the prophet, who was it? The, you know, the
some guy, unnamed guy.
Yeah. And not, you know, that's what confuses me too, that it was of God. It was true.
Yes.
It was a prophecy that was true. But yet, he tells him, get behind me, Satan. It's a little bit confusing. But ultimately, I truly believe Paul was right, even though it doesn't mean because the Spirit of God told him what would happen, that he shouldn't have gone. It was God's plan for Paul. Because he had told him before that you will go and, you know, that you will testify for me even in Rome. And like you said, I think it was all part of God's plan. It wasn't an easy way. But, you know, God has his ways for whatever reason. Joseph is a great story. He had a purpose for his life. 17 years, it looked like it was backfiring.
But Joseph didn't bring that on himself.
It says the Spirit of God led Paul to go to Jerusalem. Was he wrong?
I don't know. All those other guys said this. And it says that of the Spirit, they said to him, don't go. I don't know. For sure, God is in control. For sure. And God brings good out of this. Well, one good thing is we have something to talk about tonight.
Yeah.
Right, if this hadn't happened, you know, we'd move on to some other chapter.
What time is it? Let's see. It is 1 o'clock. Call Nicholas, maybe.
Right. Okay, so Paul ends up in the temple, and they say, oh, there's a guy, he's bringing Gentiles into the temple, and of course that was a bad thing.
Strong hatred in this.
Yeah.
Talk about racism.
So there's going to be religious hatred. There's going to be a riot, and the soldiers step in, right? And it must have been quite a thing. They end up having to carry Paul out. He couldn't walk by himself. It was better for them to carry him. Okay. And you know, people cry one thing and then they cry another thing, and but basically they all agreed, get rid of him, kill him. And the soldiers couldn't have a conversation in the midst of that crowd, and so they take Paul off into the building. And Paul says, "Can I say something?" And the soldier says, "You can speak Greek. I thought you were that Egyptian guy that had all those." Murderous robbers. No, that's not me. I'm a Jew of Tarsus, a city in Cilicia, and that's not your average city, have you know. And could I speak to these people? This is one of those places where the chapter division is probably in the wrong place. You know, don't stop at the end of this chapter, just keep on moving. And so he begins to speak to the crowd in Hebrew. See this?
I thought it was Aramaic, or was it
Hebrew? Mine's in Aramaic. Hebrew, but I remember reading
Hebrew.
In our other one.
Well, whatever. He spoke in the language.
In the language.
Right? It wasn't in Greek. Okay. And that's always interesting when you speak in the language of the crowd. At least they can understand what you're saying. And they got quiet. They really got quiet. And so he began to give his testimony about where he was born and his education. He was educated in Jerusalem at the feet of Gamaliel, and he followed the Jewish laws just like all of you do, he says. Just like one of you. In fact, I was really zealous. In fact, I persecuted this way. I have a book called The People of the Way, and the thesis of the book is we can't seem to agree on a name chosen from among the current names, Baptist, Presbyterian, Lutheran, Methodist, and all of this. He says, so why don't we just scrap all of those and take some biblical phrase, the way. And he was talking about getting along with other Christians. It's a nice book. Paul says, I used to persecute these people. In fact, if you talk to the leaders here, they'll tell you that I had papers and I was going to Damascus and I was going to arrest and call them off to jail. And I was stopped at midday by this bright light. And he tells the whole story of his conversion. He goes on and says, I came to Jerusalem and God warned me that if I stuck around there, I'd be in big trouble. So I got out of town. And the kicker here is in verse 21. God said, depart, for I will send you from here, far from here, to the Gentiles. Boom! And that's kind of like speaking at a Democratic presidential convention and saying, and I'm a Republican. I love Republicans. Whoa. Talk about pressing the wrong buttons. But you would think that a guy who was as educated as he is would know not to use that word. It just wasn't politically correct. This was not the time and place to use that word. He knew exactly what he was saying. And that really stirred him up. You thought they were upset before. I mean, that's the whole reason they were upset, because they accused him of bringing this Greek guy in. Ah! So the riot starts again. The poor soldiers. I can just see one of them. I knew I shouldn't have let him say it. I just do it. What's the boss going to say now? So they decide to do something which is has often been used in history since then. Trial by scourging. We want the truth, so we're going to whip this guy until he tells us the truth. That'll do it. You know, I won't tell you the truth unless you hit me. And then I'll tell you the truth.
Torture.
Kind of like those Puritans in New England.
Yes, the witch hunts.
Right, where they douse them in water. And if they came up alive, you knew they were a witch.
They drowned.
But if they drowned, you knew they were it.
Yeah. No way. Exactly.
That doesn't make any sense at all. But, you know, this doesn't make any sense either. Mm-hmm. And so they're going to start whipping him. And he whipped him. Paul pulls out his passport. And says, wait a minute, is this any way to treat a Roman? It must have meant something in those days to have a Roman citizenship. I mean, those legionaries might just come in here and wipe you guys out if you mistreat me. I'm just a humble citizen of the Roman Empire, but I demand respect. Most people think that way. Because they're more evil on the front. And the soldier goes, wait a minute. You're a Roman citizen? It cost me a lot of money to get my citizenship. Paul says, not me. I was born free. And I just want to break out into a song. I won't.
Hey, before we get too far with the story, I just want to back up a little bit about Paul and how he, in different situations, acted differently. There was another situation where he actually circumcised Timothy to, you know, be accepted in that crowd, because that helped the gospel, further the gospel. Then he came to Jerusalem, and he saw the church elders and Peter and everybody who were, you know, staying away from the Gentiles, not eating with them, and so on and so forth. And he blasted them.
Mm-hmm.
The context there is leadership, Christian leaders who should know better.
Mm-hmm.
And there he wouldn't go along with that. But out in the public, to the lay people, he did what he had to do to get a foothold, you know, an audience to share the truth.
Yeah, it wasn't sinful, because Timothy was at least half Jewish, so circumcising him wasn't totally wrong. Of course, Titus, who was not even partly Jewish, Paul says, not at all. We're not going to do it. We're not going to circumcise him, because that would be an offense. Yeah, so there are certain things that you can do or not do. That's okay. But he's in trouble on this day.
Yeah.
He's in trouble.
So let's go back to where we are. He's going to get scourged.
He's going to get scourged, and he raises the issue of citizenship. I mean, can you imagine if Rosie gets arrested and she says, "Don't you know I'm from Sri Lanka?" And I'll bet that would put fear in the heart of the people who arrest you. They'd be concerned that all of the screaming hordes of Sri Lankans would come to rescue you. So it's, "Oh, we're sorry. We're sorry. Back off." Well, when the issue of citizenship came up, now the soldiers are, "Oh, we are in big trouble because we've arrested this guy without due process." That's a precious thought to me. Coming from the West, the concept of government by law and due process, all of this, I appreciate that. Because not everybody has that. Not, you know, there are people who, they fear that the government might just do whatever it wants to whenever it wants to. They might just break into the house and interrupt things. But the Romans had this security because they had a strong army. Well, now what do we do? All right. So they kind of keep Paul hidden for a while. And the soldiers want to know what this is all about. They still don't know. They still don't know. So they arrange for a meeting the next day. And Paul's there with the Jewish leaders. And he says, "Okay, now, let me tell you again." And he starts again. He says, "I have lived in good conscience before God until this day." And the high priest just yells at him and orders that Paul be smitten. Paul says, "What are you? You're going to stand here and judge me by the law? Yet contrary to the law, you're going to have me struck?" Huh. Somebody else says, "Oh, don't you know who that was? That was the archbishop." "I didn't know that. I didn't know that. If I had known that was the archbishop, I wouldn't have said that, because you're not supposed to speak evil of those that are above you." That was a cut. I mean, that was like saying, "That guy's the archbishop, you know, that guy's the high priest? Can't be. I mean, a high priest wouldn't act like that, would he?" I'm reading a lot into it, but that's how I take it. So Paul, perceiving that part of the group were Pharisees and part of the group were Sadducees, "You thought Gentiles brought him up for the day before in the crowd? He's got the right word today, and it's the word resurrection." He says that and polarizes the group. Before, everybody was against Paul. Now, they've divided, and it's left and right. They're against each other. And the one group that believes in a resurrection is, "Oh, he's right. He's definitely right." Yeah. Fickle people.
He knew how to stir up that Sanhedrin.
Oh, yeah.
Romans
going, "All right, now we're fighting each other. We're going to kill him. Now they're attacking each other."
Right.
Crazy crap.
And think of this mass of people who have been there calling for his death, and now half of them are on his side. Think of this mass of people who have been there calling for his death, and now half of them are on his side. Olympia Coast! And immediately everybody is either for you or against you. There's nobody in the middle. Really did get him stirred up. Well, now what do you do with the guy? Well, you lock him up again. You keep him locked up. And you've got to get this figured out. Well, in the meantime, 40 guys decide that they're not going to eat or drink anything until they kill Paul.
Now, there's just 40 guys?
Just. Well, they came out somewhere, didn't they?
You know what? I wonder how long they went on with that since Paul didn't die for quite a while.
I wonder if they died in 10 days.
Yeah, 40.
About 40 days later.
Yeah.
They're going delirious.
Yep. Well, word of this conspiracy leaks out, and a relative of Paul's takes word to the soldier in charge and says, hey, there's these guys, they're going to kill Paul, and this the group is going to ask you to bring Paul for a meeting again, and on the way they're going to attack. And the soldier, wise man, at this point, he can't win. Right? He says, pass the buck. Let's give this to somebody else to handle. Send it up. Send it up. Okay? And so he writes a letter. Did you like the letter? There's some truth in it. Did you notice the truth? Oh, let's see. We're near the end of 23, and in verse 26 he says, Claudius Lysias to the most excellent governor Felix sends greeting. This man was taken by the Jews and would have been killed by them, except I came to his rescue and I understood that he was a Roman. And so I decided that this required more investigation. He wouldn't have discovered any of that if Paul hadn't brought it up. Paul's pleading for his life. This guy sounds like, hey, I have everything under control. But at this point, I'm not really sure what to do. I can't figure out what they're accusing him of. It seems to be just something according to their Jewish laws. And I don't think he's worthy of death. But when I found out that he's a Roman, I thought, yeah, maybe you ought to. Because you're older and wiser. And how many soldiers accompanied Paul on this prisoner transfer?
200.
How about 200? 200 soldiers to guard the preacher's way to trial.
Have you ever seen 10 Hasidic Jews mad at you?
Yeah, that's true.
Hey, can we go back again to verse 11 of 23?
Sure.
It just sort of jumped out at me. Because of the discussion we were having earlier, mm-hmm. was it God's will that Paul went to Jerusalem? Here, the Lord stood near Paul and said, take courage, as you have testified about me in Jerusalem, so you must also testify in Rome. Now, to me, it says two things. Either God redeems even our blunders, this could be the case, or is part of God's plan that he testify also in Jerusalem, and now, just like he did here, you're going to do it over there.
And this would not be very encouraging to me.
Well, it would also be encouraging that, you know what, they can't touch me.
Okay.
And
yeah,
that would
I'm
give me
live.
Some boldness
okay.
to tell them what they need to hear.
But if I went to Jerusalem with the idea that I would see hundreds, thousands of people converted, and now that hasn't happened, and God says, all right, just as you came to Jerusalem, now you're going to go to Rome. I'm thinking, oh, failure again. Thanks. But
by world
say,
standards.
I'm saying.
By world standards.
The preaching of the gospel always has an effect on people.
That's right.
It either softens them or hardens them. And you wonder if maybe it wasn't God's plan that Paul come to Jerusalem and stir them up so that they become more hardened. We don't know. We don't know.
It's Testament prophets also say, in the, you know, like Isaiah, I forget where, you know, and even word for word, but that he, you know, would prophesy in foreign tongues, talking about in the future. In other words, he would shame the Jew. The Jew is the one that God was speaking through, was working through to reach out to the world, but the day was coming that the gospel, God would speak through Gentiles to bring them to jealousy, to, you know, and yeah, maybe hardness, maybe, you know.
And so he's gone from one capital city of a small colony in the Roman Empire. Two, he's headed towards the capital of the empire. If what you wanted was to get to the top, that's where he's going. And so the soldier sends him off to see Felix. The governor receives the letter and says, well, where's this guy from? I guess it's a question of jurisdiction. And Felix says, oh, he's from Cilicia. Okay, fine. I'll listen. So tell your accusers to show up. We'll talk about it. And that's where we end. God is taking care of him.
That's where we end.
That's where we end tonight.
We do this study today in the Word at the Bible Institute. And it's been doing the Book of Acts for sure.
Okay.
So I actually it went on. But it's really a very exciting story.
The Book of Acts is great.
Yeah.
I love it.
It was before the next higher up.
It's
I haven't got to Rome yet, but gosh, really?
I remember we were doing some street preaching in Philadelphia once, and it was my first time to be with the group, and some of the fellows who had been there before said, see that really tall guy over there? He's undercover police. And you see that guy over there? He's undercover police. One of the other preachers, one of the group. And he said, whenever we do street preaching, the police want to have a presence just to make sure that there's no trouble. And so they send undercover police. But he says, he knew them. I mean, they've been around before.
How did they know you were going to be there?
I'm not really sure. I don't think we filed for a permit or anything. But I thought, that's pretty interesting. Because you don't know if those guys ever go to church. But they've got to be there for this. Who knows what they'll hear? So you think about these soldiers. I mean, they're probably thinking, oh, another religious controversy.
I know, yeah. It's interesting what Felix and them thought and how much they had to hear.
And by the time we get done with the Book of Acts, we probably ought to know the account of the conversion of Paul. Because it comes several times yet.
You know, humanly speaking, if you want to tell a friend or even your child, you say once, and you really want them to know the truth about something, you might say, you know, don't do this, this is wrong, or whatever. But eventually, you sort of give up. You know, you say, okay, you know, we're out of my hands. But here you have God, his children, and he loved them so much that even after they murdered him, he still pursued. You know, yes, in some cases, the testimony hardened their hearts, but in other cases, and he knew those hearts, they were being softened, they were being drawn to him. You know, you and I would have given up long ago. You know, and you killed my son, you're out, you know? But yet, he pursues. Pursues. And, you know, I also see that in all of this.
What was it in Romans where he says, has God forsaken his people? No, they can still be saved. And that's precious news. That the sins of their ancestors don't prevent them from being saved. It's not like God just wrote them off.
To modernize, get new people and whatnot. And the common somebody because.
Oh, you're talking about what you know, the kind of disagreements like the.
Yeah, because the church is changing. And back then, the church, you know, the way, even though it was brand new, it was evolving so quickly. And, you know, this is not
what
we want it to look like.
Everything's
happening today. This is not what church is supposed to look like. We're supposed to fit in and do things in this order. And some of the people were getting so angry and left church for good. Like, they don't even know anymore. These are people that were, like, just the pillars of the church when I was growing up there. And I just thought, so frustrating that they were, like, taking it out on God. You're cutting off your nose to spite your face, as we would say. But people, there'll always be something, some reason why they can't get along, and, you know, whether it's the way they sing the hymns or the way people dress, or they go out and watch this or drink that. Or
I understand both sides of that story, because as a leader, you want to do everything you can do to reach people. And if changing things is what's required, or at least is what you think is required, then you're going to push for change. But if you're not a leader, and you've been in the church for 30 or 40 years, now all of a sudden, it seems like somebody hijacked your church.
Yeah.
It's not comfortable anymore. And that's a difficult place for both sides to be. Sometimes the new blood says, move over, Grandpa. We're moving out.
Exactly. And I felt for the grandpa. It's terribly unfair. But at the same time, you can't get the young people today to go in and sing Awkward Christian Soldiers. I mean, they're just not going to do it. You know, the 15, 17, 20-year-olds are just like, man. It's the generation. The world has changed so much. The music has changed. Everything has changed. Say it's all bad, it's just terribly different.
It's quite different.
Terribly different. And I felt for everybody involved because, I mean, I can sing some of the new songs of the torture, but I don't like it.
But
I
if
like
the new things take away, detract from the message, it is wrong.
Yeah, but they don't know.
In my sister's church, they dim the lights during the service. You cannot read a Bible.
Okay.
You simply cannot read a Bible.
Can you sleep?
And this, to me, is not something I'm prepared to put up with. I'm going to church. I would like to be able to open my Bible and actually read a passage.